Brad, I just got confirmation that I'm going up to the Alaska Comics Camp. This is the retreat that Alaska Robotics holds for cartoonists the last two or three years in Juneau, Alaska. And I'm excited for it, my friend.
Wow, that sounds neat.
I'm excited for this. Yeah, it's from everything I gather, it's about 30 to 50 cartoonists from all over North America, and I think one or two from Europe, that basically come to Juneau, Alaska, and do kind of an outbound get-together, but also kind of teaching each other classes and all sorts of stuff. And to me, this sounds like summer camp, and I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, it very much is summer camp.
It's also, I realized, it's the first time in 10 years that I will be taking a non-income trip. Does that make sense? A non-income earning trip. Yeah.
This isn't going to be about sales or convention commissions or anything like that. This is just to kind of feed you emotionally and creatively.
Yeah, it's exactly it. So it's like I'm not going to have three other suitcases in tow, each one just at the limit of 50 pounds filled with books and pins and stickers. It's just going to be me traveling. I'm really excited for it. It's a little me time, Brad.
Yeah, you deserve that. You deserve that every once in a while.
If my life was a Lifetime movie, right now this would be the moment where I'm in the tub with the white wine and I'm reevaluating how I'm going to handle things. And through the third act is where it is my time to shine. And
right.
So Juno is me in the tub with the white wine going, you know what? I deserve better. And that's what I'm going to be doing in the third act. That's
So now, do you know who else is going to be there?
Well, I know Katie Lane, the cartooning lawyer to the stars, is going to be there. And Dylan McConus, a family man, is going to be there. Those are the only two that I've talked to. I think Dave Mauchie and Lucy Bellwood are going and Ryan North. Not sure.
Oh, wow.
I'm not 100% sure who's going yet, but I'm very excited. Very excited.
And are you going to be doing any? And are you going to be hosting any classes? Have they asked you to do something like that? Is that expected of you?
I'm willing to, but you know what's funny? Let's talk about this as a friend for a second.
Yeah.
If you were going to consult, what's the one thing Dave Kellett could teach other cartoonists at a comics camp for the half an hour to 45 minutes?
I'd want to hear about finding your voice as a humor writer. I think you've got one of the most distinctive voices when it comes to humor in comics, so I'd want to hear you talk about that for a long time.
That was just sincere enough to make me blush. Good job. That was...
And you could talk an awful lot about social media, but you don't have the market cornered on that. You know, you do a very good job of building community on social media. That would be something I'd be willing to listen to. But the number one thing is listen to you talk about your writing process.
Huh, okay. All right, I'm down with that. Well, I'm going to scratch out this one that I had written down, which was Let's Talk Color Theory. Let's Talk Color Theory with everyone's favorite colorblind cartoonist, Dave Kellett.
Yeah, here's how to handle color theory. Hire somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my theory right there. Hire somebody.
Let's Talk Color Theory with Dave Kellett, featuring just the color blue.
At least I'm colorblind. That's what it is in theory.
The one color I can see. I'm not sure what I would teach. I guess I could teach writing. That seems a weird one for me to teach, but I guess I could do it. I'd be honest, the tiny part of my heart was hoping that I could convince a Brad Geiger to join me up there and we would do some podcasting on the fly. But that is okay because we're going to do that at NCS Fest in May. That will be super fun. But for people in Juneau, Alaska, I'm coming up to see you. I'm coming up to see the trees and the bears and the moose. And are there moose? There's moose that far up.
I got to figure they'd have moose up there. Yeah, there's moose up in Alaska.
There's two guys that don't know anything about moose talk moose for a half an hour.
I know they're big and they got spindly legs. They're super dangerous on the roadways because they're incredibly heavy creatures and they've got very thin legs. So if you hit one with a car, you basically knock those legs down and you have an immense amount of weight just come crashing down through the windshield and people have died.
The giant bull moose is, oh my God. It's like, have you ever seen those videos like a bull moose walking down the middle of a street and like,
yes,
you know, you'll
yes.
have a Ford F-150 or F-250, a big truck. And this bull moose is like, I'm picking up a baby bumblebee. Just a giant animal going by.
I didn't know that's what they sounded like. I thought they sounded like, hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Well, on that note, hi, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show with the two foremost experts on bull moose in the world.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is brought to you by patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's dive right in, my friend. What is first on the agenda for us this week, talking comics on Comic Lab?
We've got so much. We've got a few more questions from some Patreon backers that I'd like to get through because they're raising some really, really engaging topics, and I want to get into it. Here's one from Patreon backer Terrence McManus, and they write, in the spirit of end-of-year critical self-reflection, what do you think is the number one reason why mid- to long-term readers fall away from your comics? What, if anything, are you doing to address those specific reasons in 2019? So what do you think? In other words, you've been doing comics for a few years now. You've started to build an audience. And you see that in some cases, or maybe you hear later on, oh, yeah, I used to read your comic, but I stopped and for whatever reason, and it's good to know you're still doing well. I get that from time to time. Oh, yeah, I used to read Greystone Inn. I haven't checked in a long time. And you get the sense that you've got some mid to long-term readers who have just kind of fallen away. And what do you do about that, Dave?
Well, I'm trying to think of a good visual metaphor to describe what you should be doing as a cartoonist. But let me put it in a way, I'm not thinking of a good visual, so I'm just going to put it in hard numbers. Let's say you always have 10,000 readers. At any given point, you're going to be losing 250 readers, and ideally, you should be gaining 250 to 300 readers. Yeah. So I don't want this person or any of us to focus so much on Greg, so much as the abstract of Gregs that are out there in the world. Like, if you've lost Greg, it's not like your career is over, because yes, you should be getting 10 more Gregs or 2 more Gregs or 5 more Gregs. You basically just want your replacement rate to be higher than your loss rate in your readership. Mm-hmm. But don't focus so much on the individual person. My words are failing me though, Brad. Here, why don't you take a running stab at that? Hold on.
I think you're going down the right path. The answer is that you don't take your eye off of the big picture. The big picture, and Patreon has really made this clear for me, because I see it happen right in front of me in a very clear way every month. Every month I've got new people coming in, and I've got existing patrons who are checking out, and I've got patrons who used to be existing patrons who had checked out who are checking back in. And it's what businesses call churn. And what that means is you've always got people coming in and out of your business. And you've got some people who are there for a long time, some people for a short time, and everything in between. But you really can't, if you're focused on, oh, why did this long-term reader drop away? You're taking your eyes off the real focus. That focus should be on the big picture. The fact that you're always doing something to keep people coming in. You're doing things to keep those existing readers happy and engaged. And of course, you're going to lose some longtime readers because they're going to move on to other things. They will have gotten their fill out of what you have to offer, and that's okay, even if you're still going. Because, again, you have to look at time as a continuum. And like I said, Patreon, if you're paying attention to your Patreon numbers, it illustrates that for you very, very clearly. Is that those long-term readers who are going away, there's about an 80% chance they're going to come back at some point. They're going to say, oh, yeah, I remember this. And your output, your outreach on social media should be such that you're always laying the welcome mat for that to happen. You're always putting stuff out there so that somebody who may have fallen away after a little bit has an easy entry point to come right back in. You're always posting stuff out there that is self-contained to a certain extent, that it can be enjoyed in a chunk. And this should be part of your ongoing effort anyway, because on your site or on social media, somebody's always coming across your stuff for the very first time. If that comic doesn't grab them, then you've lost them. Well, it's the same thing with a long-term reader. They might have a little bit more understanding of who the characters are, but they will have zero understanding of the storyline. If your story, and if that chunk that you're putting out on social media isn't something they can readily consume, then you're not going to bring them back. You should be always posting stuff in the idea that you don't have to know 8 pages of backstory to understand what's going on right here. It should be consumable. Yep. So don't take your eye off the big picture. Don't focus on longtime readers. Those people are probably coming back. And your social media should be continually put out there in a way that sets the table for them to come right back when they're ready or when they want to. What do you think about that?
Well, what I think about that is I love certain answers where I go first and I just ended up sounding like an idiot because your answer was so much better. This is what the our comparative answers sounded like. All right. So, Dave, here's our first question. What do you think the answer is for this person?
Well, Krog think rock is hard and cold. Krog think fire is hot and ouchy to touch. What does Brad think?
Well, I am the very model of the modern Major General.
And just Brad has this beautiful dance of language of an answer that's just like, oh, yeah, that's the better way to answer that question. So I think Brad wins that question.
I think I've taken a huge step forward in the internal voice. I've gone from, hey, look at this. This truck driver doesn't deserve anything because I'm horrible, to being a nice British, well, I think that certainly is the case, but you're still not getting a tip.
I want everyone in the audience to know that I did not bring it around to Brad not tipping. That was Brad that did that. As a friend, I did not bring it up.
Oh, man. No, I was listening back to that show and I was just roaring with laughter. That was a really, really fun way that you brought that around.
I just love the, I gave him a firm handshake. What a guy. What a champ. That's delightful. Well, no, I think, Brad, I think your answer is so good. And also, one other capstone that I will put on this is that you always want to keep in mind that in some respects, you're cartooning for a nebulous audience, not specifically for Steve or for Lucy or for Cindy, right? Because part of what you're doing with your cartooning is ultimately you are cartooning for you. And if you are feeling the joy, if you're feeling the love, if you're having fun and are passionate about your cartoonings, if they're making you laugh or making you feel engaged, then the nebulous Greg or Lucy or Steve out there will also feel passionate and engaged. So don't worry so much about the individual. Worry about you and worry about, in general, how a human would react to it. And you'll find that your audience is growing if you're doing that. If you're feeling the love for the comics, if that's where your focus is, if the focus is on the comics themselves, as Brad was intimating, then you will be okay. Brad, what do you think? I think we've handled that one, yeah?
I think we've hit that one out of the park.
Well, then let me ask you, Brad Geiger, since I don't want to lead with a Krog answer this time. I don't want to be like, Dave, how do you handle your taxes?
Well, Krog take numbers, put on paper. Krog write numbers down in order.
One, all right. Two, three.
You got me there. All right. So, Bradley J., this next question is from Eric Campling, and it says, hi, Brad and Dave. You have studios. I don't have the benefit of a studio or a dedicated art space. I do have the many seating and surface options that a typical home provides. I like that. I like that way of the description. I have a couch. I have a chair. When it is time to knuckle down and draw, where's a good place to work and how would you set up for comfort and productivity? Brad, this is a great question. When you don't yet have a studio, you don't yet have a home office, you don't yet have a dedicated space in your home, would you advise someone go, and how would you advise they set it up for comfort and productivity?
In general, that's going to be a little bit of a hard question to ask because a lot of it is going to depend on what kind of person you are. In other words, if you're somebody who really enjoys being in the thick of things, you're kind of an extrovert, and you like people coming around and looking over your shoulder while you're drawing and commenting, so on and so forth, then maybe a central place like the living room or the dining room might be a good place. If you're like me and you can't stand anything that has to do with what I just said, then you're going to want to find a corner of the room, put your back to the wall so nobody can come up behind you, and find a sheltered space. Even a closet would be preferable by me to someplace out in the middle where people can comment as you're going. The number one answer to that is it really depends on who you are and how you work. However, in general, I think you need to consider ergonomics very carefully if this is your situation.
Oh, great. I'm so glad you led with that. Yes, I agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. You need to sit on a chair where you can sit up straight. I see these people talking on social media from time to time. In fact, this very topic came up, I think, on Instagram or something, where the guy was talking about working on his digital tablet in his lap on the couch. And it bothered me enough. I don't even know who this person is. I just chimed in. I said, dude, that's going to kill your back over time. That's not a smart way to do it.
And your neck and your crotch is going to be 1,000 degrees. So there's a lot wrong with that one.
Yeah. And he, you know what his answer was? What? He goes, well, I work in animation, so I'm drawing properly at a desk all day. And so this isn't going to be a problem. And I thought, That's not the way back strain works. It isn't like a cumulative thing. It's bad as bad, you know.
Brad, don't be a ninny. I drove with my eyes open for 80% of the day. So if for just a couple of minutes I want to close my eyes on the freeway, it's fine. 90% of my day, I have my eyes open. Why do you have to be so complaining about this?
Oh, my God. That's a perfect metaphor. That's exactly what he said. So, and of course, you know, at that point, I backed away because I become very careful about arguing with people on the internet. There's just no upside. So yeah, I you've got to find a place where you can sit upright comfortably, where you can get your back straight. The dining room table seems like a good option. If your option is between the couch and the dining room table, head over for the dining room table. Find a place that has the lighting that you need. In other words, if you're not doing digital, you want to have good light coming in from the opposite side of your drawing hand so that you're not throwing shadows on your work, all of that kind of stuff. But the rest of it, other than straight up ergonomics, the rest of it is really going to come down to who you are as a person, right? We know people, Dave, from back in the day who they like to go. They were talking about going to a comic shop and setting up a place at the comic shop and working on their comic there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm glad that works for you, pal. That would never work for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a different strokes for different folks kind of a thing. But yeah. I have a lot of thoughts about this, and so I want to dive right into it. So first of all,
go ahead.
Ergonomics, no matter where you set up, is key. And Brad speaks from experience, and I, having had 2 years of physical therapy to fix my shoulder and right arm, my drawing arm, can tell you that do not mess with ergonomics. That is something you want to get right no matter where you are. And frankly, it would be lovely to have an ergonomic specialist consult with you. But frankly, if you just watch 5 or 6 really well-recommended ergonomics videos on YouTube, you'll get the idea of what you need to do in terms of back straight, arm at the right angle, head at a good angle, comfortable, you know, nothing kinked, nothing strained, nothing held too long, and frankly, take a lot of breaks, right? So there's that. But also, I will talk for a minute about my early cartooning years when I first got married. My wife and I had a tiny one-bedroom apartment. There was no real place to set up shop. So what I ended up doing is basically mentally creating a little corner on a little IKEA desk in the master bedroom that was just my cartooning space.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I really resonated with having a space. When I went to this desk, I was cartooning. When I sat down in this chair, I was cartooning.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it sort of represented a start-stop to my work. Like, now I am on the couch watching TV. Now I am standing up and going to my cartooning desk, and I am now cartooning. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it kind of gave a rote physical memory of like, now I am doing the task, right? So that was good. But then I want to say this. So that was me when I first got married, one bedroom apartment. We had no money. It was a tiny little crappy IKEA desk, that kind of thing. But I also know from having done Stripped, I interviewed cartoonists that make millions of dollars a year. And they still find joy daily in going to a coffee shop and working in a public space.
Yeah.
So, and then as Brad intimated, we also both knew a cartoonist who had kids, many kids, and had to get the heck out of Dodge, he said, mentally, so would go to work at a comic book shop, you know? So it may be that if you are of that kind of personality that gains energy, gains creativity from being around people, that you might like a public working space, either in a library, a coffee shop, a comic book shop, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who doesn't have physical space at home and also doesn't want to be bothered, a library is also a great option. And
yep.
your closest library may not always be the best option, but usually within a library district, there's one corner in one nook that no one ever goes to because it's the reference section for salad. You know, like no one's going to look about lettuce in Romania, but there happens yeah. to be a desk, you know, tucked behind that one stack. And so it's an amazing one because no one ever goes over to that corner.
Yeah, that's where they keep all the books about kale that day. Even if you do go back for salad, you're not going to the kale section.
Yeah, you're not going to go to the kale section. And so that's, yeah. anyway, what I'm getting at is there are options for you when money is not helpful, you can find public spaces that are still quiet, and a library is a great one.
Library is great, not only because of what you just said, Dave, because it's one of the few public spaces left in the United States where a purchase, a money transaction is not required, where it's not assumed that you're going to buy a cup of coffee, that you're going to buy an entree, or you're going to do something like that. You walk into a library that there's no money transaction assumed. You're
yeah.
just welcomed to be there because that's what a library is. And I like that a lot about that answer.
You are not being sold to in any way, shape, or form. And so your mind yeah. can focus on the task at hand. Which in the library's case is, here are resources, use them to make society better. That's the basic idea, you know? And so it's so perfect for cartooning.
Not only that, but I mean, if you were that type of person, what better place to go to than a library? You're sitting there, you get brain locked, you're kind of stumped for inspiration. You've got an entire building full of inspiration around you. You can literally throw a dart, go to that place, pick a book up off the shelf, and find something interesting in that book.
Yeah.
It's a really great answer.
Well, and you know what's fun about that? I know I was jokingly saying find the desk behind the romaine or the kale section. And no joke, you can pull any book off of the shelf in a library and find a way to make a joke about it.
Yeah.
It is literally... Every human being behind those books in that library is saying to you, here are my best ideas that I'm trying to add to the human experience. And you as a cartoonist can distill it down within a couple pages and go, I can make a cartoon out of that.
Yeah.
And so if you're pressed for an idea, no matter what it is, car part repair, you can bet Brad can write a comic on car part repair after reading a Chilton manual. You know, is it about kale? I can absolutely write a comic about kale after reading a kale preparation cookbook. There's inspiration all around you in a library.
They've actually published a book. Will Eisner, when he was serving in World War II, did a bunch of comics that were about things like how to repair a Jeep, because they found out that if they just did a manual, how to repair a Jeep, the guys and the women who needed to know that kind of information wouldn't access it. But if it was a comic, then those folks would read it and they would get the information. So they had him doing all of these wonderful comics that were basically informational. And they published a collection of them. In fact, it's sitting here on my shelf. I think I got it once at a Harvey Awards ceremony in a gift bag. It really shows the power of there's a story in everything. And if you're a good enough cartoonist, and if you're tuned in, if you're interested, you can find something that's engaging about that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I want to put one more capstone on this, which is time. Because very often in the course of you, either by living by yourself, or you living with a couple, or you living with a family, the same space, can feel very different at a different time of day. And what I mean by that is the family has dinner, the table's a mess afterward, you wipe it clean, you do the dishes, everyone goes to bed. Suddenly that kitchen table is an open expanse for your cartooning. So if that's the only place that you have in the house to do cartooning, honest to God, this was the way I did it for the first 10 years of my marriage. If you cartoon at 2 a.m. at that space, it feels like your own private Idaho. It's amazing. It's great. You have this great expanse, beautifully lit, because it's one of the better lights in your house, shining down on the kitchen table. And by the way, like ergonomics, light can't be emphasized enough. Really, don't let your eyes get strained. Have good light on your cartooning. But what I'm saying is, time can also be your friend. Much like Captain Picard, some people think that time is a fire in which we burn. I think time is a friend that walks with us, right, Brad?
Absolutely.
When you say like Captain Picard, I think we can all learn from that.
I would say that, absolutely. And I would I would then take out my little flute whistle and play a tune.
That's still a good episode. Damn you, Brad Geiger, that's a good episode. I'm not going to take a criticism for that. Picard went on a journey. He went on a journey of the heart and mind, Brad Geiger. Don't you talk about Picard that way.
Are you looking forward to the new Picard series about Star Trek?
Not only am I looking forward to it, at a Halloween party, I met one of the writers that's working on that show. And really? The poor guy, he was just trying to get chips for a dip. And my wife said, oh, Dave, this is, I don't remember, Greg. He's working on the new Star Trek Captain Picard show. I cornered poor Greg for like 20 minutes. And he's like, dude, I just wanted to get some chips. Just let me go. All right. So hold on. How are you framing? All right. Does Starfleet play at all a role? Is he an admiral level or a captain level? Is he working as an ambassador? What's happened? I just want to know more about Captain Picard. The poor guy's like, come on, man. I was just trying to get to a beer. Can you just let me buy?
Just give me some dip. It's all I want, for crying out loud.
Like, I have the chip. He's like trying just to get to the onion dip. He's got the chip already. He's just trying to reach around me.
He's got it like precariously in front of his mouth, but he can't take a bite because you won't stop talking. He's just waiting to pop this morsel into his mouth.
And all my questions are in the sound of like a 1920s newsie. Hey, mister. Hey, mister. Is Picard going to do this? Hey, mister. I want to know if Captain Picard, is he an ambassador? Is he an admiral? What is he now? Oh, it's been so many years since we last saw Captain Picard. Ooh, mister.
Oh, that's beautiful. That poor guy. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute and stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, Brad and I are going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Yeah, because, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And an exclusive Patreon post that go even deeper on the Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star review and a few kind words.
And that, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
And now, let's talk comics.
All right, Brad. Well, I've got our next question from listener Tyler Mann, cartoonist Tyler Mann.
Yeah.
It says, Dave and Brad, what are some things that folks don't know or need to know before going into comics full time?
Don't.
Brad Geiger, helpful advice cartoonist.
No, well, I, you know what? I'm going to stand by that. Don't do it until you absolutely are past the point of no return. In other words, we've said on this show before, 6 months at least of livable income in case everything just goes belly up and you need to dip into that savings. 6 months of safety net money is a must, in my opinion. And then, like I've said on this show many times before, don't get locked into the same mindset that I was locked in, where you tell yourself that you're not an official cartoonist until you've gone full time. That was a horrible mindset for me to be in. And there was nobody who could talk me out of it. So I'm sure me telling you about it is not going to have much more effect than if I would have been listening to a podcast back then.
Well, can I pause you for a second, Brad?
Yeah.
Can I pause? So now that you are a professional cartoonist, what would you say to that Brad Geiger who couldn't be talked out of it back then?
Oh, I honestly don't know. The only thing I could say is from my experience, and that is once I did make that transition from part-time to full-time cartoonist, absolutely nothing changed except I didn't have a safety net, and the stakes were much higher. In other words, the two things that changed weren't necessarily positive things. They made things more dangerous and more scary than anything else. Because now it's like you got to make this work, and there's a lot of good that comes out of that, but it's a painful good. In other words, while you're in it, it's very painful. It brought me to some very good things. I'll tell you just as an aside. I was talking to Phil Folio about going full time. We were having dinner at a nice Indian restaurant just outside by the Javits Center after New York Comic Con, and I was talking to him about a number of things, including my idea to do Not Safe for Work stuff on Patreon, because he's got some deep catalog experience with doing that kind of work, and I wanted to kind of feel him out on that whole topic. And I talked about going full time, and he said, it really stuck with me, don't have a backup plan. And I'm like, oh, what do you mean don't have a backup plan? He says, if you have a backup plan, you're going to use it. You need to not have a backup plan. You need to get into a situation where you've got to pay the mortgage and you've got to figure out how to make that happen. And that's the only way you're going to get to that place that you need to be. But he didn't say this, but I can tell you, it hurt like hell getting that place. It was an uncomfortable process, but there was a lot of truth in what he said. And that was, you don't have a plan B or else you're going to use it. You're going to use a plan B if you've got it.
Right.
But I would just say, don't be in a rush to take that step. You're going to get there. You don't need it for validation. You don't need it for justification. Just take your time and get there. Now, once you've made that decision, once you're full time,
okay.
My best advice to you is A, set a schedule and keep deadlines, because it's the first thing that loosens up. Oh my God. I was a time management machine when I had a day job. You know why? Because I had to be. I had to be a time management machine. When I was a full-time dad, I was a full-time artist at a newspaper, and I was doing my comic in what could have only been known as full-time. I had three full-time jobs. When you're doing that, there's no way that you can slough off when it comes to time management. I was a time management machine. When I left my day job at the newspaper, my time management went to shit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I fell apart because all of a sudden it wasn't, I have to do this now. It was, maybe I'll do this now, or maybe I'll do it tomorrow. And procrastination.
I will echo that, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, will I co-sign that. You know what happened for me, Brad, is the first 6 months, because I felt like I was given a hall pass in terms of time. And my scheduling was amazing, because I was like, I feel like I have 60 full hours every week to work. I'm going to fill every minute. Oh, it's going to be amazing. Bang, buddy, bang, boom. And then 6 months pass, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to sit and read The Economist on the couch for an hour. I deserve it. And then that would turn into, I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to write outside in the grass, and that's going to be lovely. And then I'll just take a little nap. And now I'm just going to just watch 5 seconds of this Family Guy clip. Oh boy, I'm being productive. And then it slowly stretches out. So yeah, Brad is absolutely right. That's scheduling is something you have to keep an eye on like a hawk. And one of the reasons why I am a big proponent of setting these annual goals and that break them down into even weekly steps is because visual accountability, we are all visual people as cartoonists. Visual accountability is a big one for me. because you can see if you haven't checked off the thing for the day that you have to get done or the five things. So one big advice I would give people when they go pro or full time is create a system of accountability for yourself because you are now your boss.
Yeah.
There's no external anxiety of like, I've got to appeal to my manager, my supervisor, my vice president. Now it's I've got to live up to me. And so the external accountability is the boss now. And so that becomes a big one.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's another one that I want you to have on your list. Get on top of the bureaucracy of being a small business person. In other words, make sure that you are where you need to be in terms of sales tax in your area. If you're doing conventions or selling merchandise, make sure that you are submitting your estimated tax payments on time. Make sure that you're estimating your taxes correctly. If you don't have one already, you should absolutely be looking for a CPA who has experience working with freelance artists, mm-hmm. because that CPA is going to know your unique needs. And it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all thing. You definitely want to, especially like we said before, this year more than ever, with so many things in tax law flipped upside down, this is the year for you to really, really make sure that you're dotting your I's and crossing your T's. And if you're not working with a good CPA, this is the time to do that. Right. Very much so.
Yep.
So make sure that you're doing estimated payments on time and accurately. And just make sure you're doing all of those bureaucratical things that you need to do now that you're a small business person. What do you think?
I think bureaucratical is a word we should add to the English dictionary. I like that word. That was an A+ word, bureaucratical. So I want to echo Brad's thought that, and joking aside, when I became a small business owner, which is what you kind of are when you become a professional cartoonist by working for yourself, mm-hmm. I found I had to come into compliance with city, and I'm not joking about this, city laws, county laws, state laws, federal laws, sales tax laws, labor laws.
Yeah.
And all of those were important. And if I skimped on anyone, I would eventually get a letter from one of those bodies going, hi, you may not realize this, but you're not in compliance with something or something.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Unfortunately, it takes about a year to make sure you've got them all in compliance. But once you kind of have a checklist up on one of your pegboard, you know, oh, I got to do the sales tax filing. Oh, I got to do the local city tax filing. Oh, I got to do the federal tax filing, all those different ones. And you'll just get better at it as you go. But to Brad's broader point, time is a big one. Money is a big one. I will definitely co-sign on the 6 months plus of savings. And what we mean by that is 6 months where if you made zero money today, you would have 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months that you could pay for with no income coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be saying to yourself, well, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. How am I going to get to there? Trust Brad and I. Get to there before you make the leap to professional cartooning. And the way you do it is, frankly, you can't just magically snap new income into your life. But you can save, you can scrimp and save. And as Brad likes to say, you can go into pioneer mode.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't need an Xbox game. You don't need an Xbox. You don't need a new TV. You don't need a new couch. You don't need to go see movies. You want to be a cartoonist. That's your big dream. Save for it. Because when you do make that leap, you will be so happy that you have a backup. And frankly, you will need a backup on certain months because you had come to rely on much more than you thought the income from your day job.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be some lean months like we've talked about in past shows at like the beginning of the year in January, February, March. And you're going to need that 6 month buffer.
Yeah. And the last point that I'm going to make is that you're going to tell yourself, oh, right now I'm putting 40 hours into my comic and making X amount of dollars. When I put 60 hours into my comic, I'm going to make a half as much more. I'm going to make another 20 hours worth of dollars. That math doesn't always work out that way.
Right.
Mainly because, like we were talking about time management, you're not going to be putting those full 20 hours in. Every now and again, you're going to be on the couch reading The Economist, which isn't a horrible use of time either. But
no,
you know what we're
magazine,
saying.
No, it's a good magazine, Brad. Yeah, it's really good reporting.
It's very good reporting. Yikes. So no, it is. It is. It's just not the magazine that I would reach for first.
The camera cuts to Brad reading Stars. They're just like us.
Yeah. That's what's going to be my example.
Look, everyone. Tom Cruise magazine. Has second knuckle up his nose. That's amazing. Stars are just like us.
No, don't kid yourself about that math. That math doesn't always work. And more to the point, it's going to work over the course of maybe a year or two. But that math takes a little while to kick in. And you can't count on it right away. So, and last point I'm going to make is just stay nimble, stay open-minded, stay tuned in, and be ready to change on a dime. Because frankly, that's what got you here, is being able to change and adapt and to learn new things and to be open to new ways of doing things. Your ability to survive now is going to be linked right into your ability to change and adapt and nimbly move from one mindset to another. And we see this happening very, very quickly, very clearly in webcomics right now, where it's very easy to get into that mindset of the old guard, of the same people that we sneered at when we were all young web cartoonists having print versus web wars with the syndicated guys. It's very easily to fall into that same trap of saying, well, no, this is how we do it. We have a free website up and we put ads on it and we do this, then we do that. Don't get trapped by that. Be ready to change on a moment's notice, because the publishing atmosphere around you is changing that quickly, if not more so, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's 100% true. And in fact, your points are bringing us to our next question, which I want to throw at you, because it also deals with day jobs and cartooning. So let me throw this one out at you, Brad. So this is from listener Audie Norman, and it says, Dave and Brad, I'm trying to find work in a new town. I'm nowhere close to being able to go full time as a cartoonist, and you recommend keeping a day job. So what kind of job should I shoot for? Should I look for something creative and possibly use up my creativity bank at work, but feel spent when I want to come home and do comics? Or should I find anything to pay the bills, knowing I can do the comic stuff when I'm not working? Brad, this is a great, great question.
Yes.
It has a lot to do with creativity, how your energy works, how different personalities work. So go, Brad. I want to hear Brad Geiger's answer to this one.
Well, my answer to this is going to be very similar to the answer of where to work at home. And that is, this answer is going to depend on what kind of person you are. Now, there's two types of people, or two types of day jobs. One that fits right into your wheelhouse, and the kind of day job that is kind of like you punch in, you punch out, you make your money, and you go home, and it does, and you don't even think about it after that. The one that you decide on is going to be informed by who you are as a person. If you're the type of person that has to be creative, that feeds on creative energy, and the more creative output you put out into the world, the more it generates within, and you just make that go like a perpetual motion engine, then obviously you're going to want to find a day job where you can be creative, even if it's a different flavor of creative than you might have thought, right? It might not be being a cartoonist, but it might be a layout designer or somebody who works at a print shop or any number of different things where you can be creative if you feed on that creativity. Now, here's the first clue as to where Adi might jump out, because he talks about using up his creativity bank. Well, that tells me he's not necessarily that perpetual motion creative person where he might have a certain amount of creative energy, and that's a different type of person. One is not better than the other. But if you feel as if you only have so much creativity, then you want to get a punch in, punch out job, because you want to hoard your creativity for this other thing that you're doing. So you don't want to get into a career necessarily where you're going to be thinking about this job when you come home. You want something that you can be a little bit dispassionate about. Go in, earn your money, do a good job, give them what they need, punch out, and then go live your real life, kind of like a Walter Mitty kind of character, where you do this, but then you really thrive on this other thing. If you feel like creativity is a quantity that is finite, then you want a punch in, punch out job. If you think of creativity as this infinite well that builds upon other creativity, then go out and get that creative job. It's the right job for you. What do you think, Dave Kellett?
Brad Geiger, with infinite love in my heart, I am going to super disagree with you on this one.
This is one
where I'm going to put down a hard line on where I land on this question.
Wow, so, I cannot wait to hear this.
First of all, I actually respect Brad's opinion. Joking aside, I do respect where you're coming from. And I think Brad's right that their different personalities will respond very differently to this question. But I have very strong feelings about where I think you should land on this question, regardless of how you feel. So this is me saying, ignore your fifis. This is how you should do this. All right, here we go.
Okay.
So I don't know why I said fifis.
Your fifis.
I know. So anyway, first of all, what a great opportunity in life to get paid to learn different aspects of creativity. So if you can get a job that's even kind of creative, but uses a new software that you're not familiar with, or teaches you a new aspect of how to do layout or writing or creativity or drawing, take that job. Because cartooning is a career of many hats. And so if you can get a layout job, if you can get a graphic design job, if you can get a copywriting job, if you can get a marketing or advertising job, take it, because it will teach you skills that you will 1,000% use. Maybe not now, maybe not next year, but somewhere in your cartooning career, you're going to go, oh, you know what? When I used to write ad copy for local shoe companies, you know what? We used to do it this way. I could do it something similar in my cartooning. So why not get paid to learn creative approaches, creative techniques, creative softwares in your day job, and then be able to use that in your cartooning? So that's my first part of my answer.
Yeah.
Is get paid to learn. That's part one. Part two is I looked it up, the quote, because I always partially remember it, but it's brilliant. The great Maya Angelou once said, you can't use up creativity. The more you use, the more you have. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big proponent of that, like, it's not like, granted, your energy levels might be tired, but your energy levels are going to be tired no matter what job you went to during the day. At night, you're going to be tired because it's the end of the day.
Yeah.
But I concur with Maya Angelou that creativity is something that begets creativity. If you are fired up about trying to solve a problem at work that's interesting and new and different, and frankly, either involves copywriting or layout or graphic design, then that night when you get home from cartooning, that creativity, that spark is a little bit going to carry forward into your cartooning. So frankly, I'd be far more worried about a day job where you're like, we're moving all the third quarter assets into the fourth quarter, and we're going to transfer the amortization into the triple digits of the... And you're like, I don't feel creative at all because this day job has sapped me of feeling any forward motion in my creativity. So I am a very big proponent of get a day job that will pay you to learn new skills or flex your creative muscles somehow, no matter how disparate or different it is from your cartooning. In fact, sometimes that's better. And also, I agree with Maya Angelou that you can't use up creativity. I think the more you use it, the better you get. It's like a muscle. It gets stronger, it gets more able, it gets more adaptive. So find a job that can spark your creativity on a day-to-day basis so that when you go home at night, you are all the more ready, all the more prepped to be a better cartoonist. Brad, what do you think of my answer, which is different than your answer?
I gotta say, you've swayed me. I'm kind of rethinking. Well, so here's the deal.
Alrighty, Dave Kellett has swayed Brad Geiger.
Don't let it go to your head, Kellett. It doesn't happen that often. No, so here's what happens. So Adi writes us and he says he's got a creative bank and there's a finite amount of creativity. And I'm thinking to myself, that's definitely not the way I experience the world. But if this person's telling me that's the way they experience it, then I'm going to take them at face value. And they say they have a finite amount of creativity, and so I'm gonna go along with that. But the more you're talking about creativity as a thing, as an experience, as a phenomenon, The more I'm really like, you know what? I think you're right in saying you might feel as if you have finite creativity, but indeed you don't. Your creativity is infinite. And
yep.
just the common sense, this is like a muscle, and the more you use it, the stronger it gets, and the more you're going to be able to do with it.
Well, you know what, Brad? Let me give you the perfect example. Do you feel like going to the gym when you go to the gym? Do you feel like it?
No.
But when you come out of the gym, do you actually feel more energetic and better and ready to face the day? And you're like, oh, I'm glad I did that.
I don't know. I never go because I don't feel like going.
Oh my God, you got me so bad you got me coughing. Oh, I did not expect the response of, oh, I don't know, I never go. That's amazing.
No, but I do know what you're talking about.
This is Brad reaching for the French onion dip and me going, so Brad, let me ask you a quick question.
Well, yeah, who was that? I think that's a Dorothy Parker quote. I hate to have to write, but I love having written. Isn't that a quote by the great Dorothy Parker?
Yeah. No, that's a great quote. I love that idea because we are all of us in our mind a little bit lazy, even about the thing we love the most with cartooning, you know?
Yeah.
And so we love having been a cartoonist,
right,
even though at the moment we might hate cartooning, you know, like the work, doing the work, putting in the work. So I'm a big proponent of the get a day job. So in fact, I'll go one further, Brad, and remind you that so my day job prior to being a full-time cartoonist was to be first a writer and then a toy designer at Mattel Toys. Your day job before being a full-time cartoonist was being a layout and graphic design expert for a newspaper. And
yeah,
both of us, I know for a fact, have taken those skills that we learned, those software skills, those people skills, those design cues that we've picked up from our day jobs and applied those to our cartooning.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Although I am going to put an addendum to what you're saying, because what you're saying, your theory advances on the assumption that it's going to be perfectly easy to get either job. And the fact of the matter is, it's going to be harder to get that creative job. And the more important thing is that you bring money in the meantime. So I will say this, if the creative job is not an option, you get that mundane job and you work that until you can make the creative job happen. There's no dishonor in working that punch in, punch out job. The more important thing is that you're bringing money in and that you can keep a roof over your head so you can keep your cartooning going. If that creative job isn't a possibility, take the mundane job and keep your eye open to pivot into a more creative job. By all means, don't sit there and say, well, I don't have a creative job, so I'm not going to get a day job. That's that's not good either. You got your bigger priority is money needs to be coming in, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so to finish that point, Stefan Pastis worked as a lawyer before he became a cartoonist. Walt Whitman, before he became a poet, or, you know, as he was trying to become a poet, I think he sold insurance or was a door-to-door salesman, or like Brad's basic point of don't worry too much about the day job in that you just make the money and then keep yourself alive, keep it going, keep yourself forward motion,
yeah,
and then work on the cartooning at night. And that is the big picture.
Wouldn't that be a great like coffee table book, Day Jobs of the Rich and Famous? Like all these people that we idolize, they all had day jobs for a certain amount of time as they were transitioning. The great story about Rodney Dangerfield, he was a aluminum siding salesman while he was, kind of going up through the clubs, his second attempt through the stand-up comedy circuit. And they said he was actually a fantastic salesperson because he was so good at talking to people, and that he turned, interestingly enough, a mundane job into training for stand-up because every time you walk up, he would do cold calls. He'd be one of these people that show up on your doorstep. Hey, it looks like you could use some siding. Well, you got to be a good talker to open up that conversation and to get somebody willing to listen to your pitch. And by the way, if you're going to be a stand-up, you've got to use those same skills walking up to the mic when you say, hey, how you doing, folks? It's great to be here. You've got to use those same skills in winning over a cold audience. I'd love to see that book, right? The day jobs that everybody's had before they were who they were. I think it would be fascinating.
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons why I love comedians and cars getting coffee is every once in a while they'll dip back into the day jobs that they had before they became stand-up. And it's so funny to think, like, Jim Gaffigan working an office job of, you know, but everyone in the office is like, Jim, you were funny. You got to get out of here. And he's like, I know. I got to get out of here. Like,
I know. I hate you people.
None of you are funny. I've got to get out of here. But yeah, no, I agree with you. That would be an amazing coffee table book because also, and maybe I should capstone this with a kindness, there are many paths to the same mountain. Yeah. Right. You don't have to follow the path that Brad did. You don't have to follow the path that I did. You can walk your own path. And regardless of what day job you're working and regardless of how many years it takes you, pursuing cartooning is itself a joy. And it's everyone has their own path to it and their own route while they're doing it. Brad's career is very different from mine.
Yeah.
And if I had to jump in and do Brad's, it would be hard for me to learn how he makes his money. And it would be hard for Brad to learn how I make my money. I mean, not impossible, but...
No, as familiar as we are with one another, it would be very difficult for me to jump in and take over Sheldon. It would be... I know what he does, but to actually do it, oh, man, it'd be difficult.
Yeah, and part of why I'm saying that is that I don't want you to get comparative in whatever journey you're on, whatever day job you have to take, to whatever hero you have in your mind's eye, whether it's Charles Schulz or Bill Watterson or, I mean, you know, all of them, by the way, had day jobs that they hated and did amazing things at night with their cartooning while they tried to launch their work. So, but in general, what I'm getting at is... don't compare yourself too much. I mean, compare yourself when it comes to inspiration. Never compare yourself when it comes to adding anxiety or diminishing your self-worth as a cartoonist or as an artist.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good place to leave that. And besides, I think we've got time for one more topic. And I know that we were talking about this earlier, and I wanted to bring it out on the show because I think it's a fascinating topic. You had kind of a reaction to seeing some of these sketchbooks. Go ahead and you remember that conversation we were having?
Yes, I do. Yeah. So, and actually, I wanted to bring this up on the show because... this actually feeds into how cartoonists can work very differently from one another in how they produce what they produce, right?
Yeah.
So I was over Christmas break. I, as some people know from the show, I give myself a week or 10 days between Christmas and New Year's to do nothing. It's my big recharge battery time for the year where I'm not producing anything. And so what ends up happening is I'm watching family movies or I'm out playing games or I'm doing this or that or it's activities. And then, you know, every once in a while, my scrolling will land on a YouTube video of another cartoonist where they're going through their 2018 sketchbook for the year. And I am astounded, Brad. I don't understand how cartoonists can produce these sketchbooks. Where are they finding the time to just sketch like this? I don't get it.
I'm flummoxed by it. Well, so I don't know. I can tell you how I do sketchbooks, and that is I take the sketches, and it helps to do this digitally, but I take the sketches that are basically the pencils of the comics I'm working on, and I put those into sketchbooks. But like in terms of having a sketchbook that's just filled with nothing but sketches that didn't necessarily get converted into final art, I have no idea. If you see any one of my sketchbooks, I've filled a couple dozen of them at this point. If you look through my sketchbooks, it's all words. It's all writing. It's storylines and ideas and jokes and gags. I do very little actual sketching in a sketchbook, you know?
And maybe it speaks to the type of cartoonist that we are, which is... so many of our characters are near and dear to us that we could draw them almost blindfolded, right? Yeah. So it's not like we need to sketch Arthur the Duck or Miss Match or, you know, like we don't need to sketch them because we've already drawn them 4,000 times already. But I get another way for me to be astounded by this is that I'm amazed when I see a cartoonist who I love and respect and they're flipping through their sketchbook on YouTube or on Twitter. And my immediate reaction is, sell that page, sell that page, sell that page, sell that one too. Why are you selling these pages? These are, you could be making money on all these. And I'm granted, that makes me sound so mercenary. I get it. But
Yeah.
I'm both flummoxed and amazed that there are cartoonists that are like, oh yeah, I just drew this for fun. No, I'll never sell this. I'm like, you spent 4 hours on that. That's part of your career. Sell that. That's great.
We need to have a talk about that. We need to start having a codification of the term sketch, because you see this on social media all the time. Somebody will put up this gorgeous oil painting looking piece of final art, and they'll go, well, here's a little warm-up sketch I did this morning. And it's like, you know what? Screw you. You and I both know that's not a warm-up sketch. I know what a warm-up sketch is. You know what a warm-up sketch. For you to be posting this art that you clearly spent hours on as a warm-up sketch is really, it's a little bit insulting, and it's making people who might not understand that you're full of shit feel like they're second rate.
Right.
Do you agree with this? I hate that warm-up sketch thing.
Yeah, it also, it has the unfortunate effect of making younger cartoonists feel like there's a goal that they'll never reach, because they're looking at their warm-up sketches and going, "Bleh." Now, listen, that being said, there are artists for whom their warm-up sketches are better than my finished ones will ever be. Like, you look at a Jim Lee warm-up sketch, and you're like, oh, okay, all right, I'm never going to be that good. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But to Brad's point, when someone goes, oh, yeah, here's something I just tossed off, and it's like, screw you, I can see seven layers of pencil underneath that ink work. That's not something you tossed off. You worked for 4 or 5 hours on that, and that is not a sketch. Do not call that a sketch.
Here's a good rule of thumb. A warm-up sketch is very rarely full color. A warm-up sketch is a pencil sketch. It's something you do to warm up. A warm-up sketch is not generally full color, don't you think? Am I wrong about that?
I mean, you could have like a color study or a color test just to see how things might lay out together as color blocks. But as artists, we can all sort of see when someone's just fiddling around to try to experiment with a sketch or, you know, get their hand loose. And by the way, I'm also fascinated with the idea of a warm-up sketch. This is not something that I do. And granted, I admit that I might be doing it wrong, that not having gone to art school and coming, frankly, out of a writing strength rather than a drawing strength, I recognize that I could be doing this wrong. But my attitude is, get to drawing. What are you doing with this warm-up sketch? You got stuff to do.
Clock is ticking.
Yeah, TikTok. Get that comic out. Don't are you going to be that much infinitely better after a warm-up sketch, Brad?
No, you're not. Of course not. I don't do warm-up sketches either. I get warmed up as I'm doing the pencils. I get that out of my system while I'm penciling.
I like the idea that a warm-up sketch, because it makes your hand seem like it's a very temperamental French actor on the French stage. And that, like, no, Francois must have his espresso before he goes on stage. No, Francois needs his cigarette before he can do any art. It's not possible. No, not today. We have to give him a warm-up sketch, you know, that kind of thing. Like, no, get Francois to work. Francois knows how to act.
Tell Francois to get his derriere out here.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, my gentle baby hand, I can't. It doesn't know how to draw until it does a warm-up sketch. There's no way it can create a line. It's just, it's so temperamental, and it needs a half an hour to warm-up sketch.
It's like it's a 1976 Ford Fiesta, you know? It's like, it's got to sit out in the driveway and just kind of chug for a while in the cold winter.
Yeah. Having driven across the country from Massachusetts to Los Angeles in a 1978 Chevelle, I can tell you that is a real thing.
Yeah. Well, the bad thing is then I get drawing too fast and then my hand seizes up and I realize I flooded it.
So I got to tell you, when my brother and I were driving across country in his Chevelle, which, by the way, America has produced no larger piece of crap than a Chevelle.
Oh, the Chevelle.
When we were driving across country, it would I would have to manually go out, pop the hood open, take the air filter off, and with my finger hold open the breather to get more oxygen into the car.
Yeah.
So we're going across the Rockies, and every time we stop to look at like the beauty of nature and be like getting back in the car, he's like, all right, go take the air filter off. And you know, you remember old cars with the circular air filter that you'd have to take the whole can off. And anyway, it would take you a couple minutes.
Was that a Chevelle? Because I remember a Chevette. Was there a feminine version of a Chevette that was a Chevelle?
Here's how shitty American car naming was in the 70s. There was a Chevette and a Chevelle.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I remember the Chevette. I didn't remember the Chevelle.
Yeah, it's not a good-looking car. And the engine was even worse. Wow. Yeah, the Chevelle was kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It was kind of a midsize, almost a sporty looking thing. Actually, it was okay looking now that I'm thinking about it. It was okay looking. Anyway, so the amazing thing was we're going across the Rockies and it starts to hail. And he goes, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to jump out and let the breather help me with the breather. And so I pop open the hood. I get the air filter off the car. I'm sticking my finger down into the frickin' breather to let it get more oxygen. And he goes, brum, 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 brum. Great. The car starts back up. I go to get back in the car. It's hailing, mind you. He intentionally turns the car back off. He goes, it's stalled. I need you to go back out and do it again. I'm like, no, I'm 15, but I'm starting this car. You are not getting me back out of that hail.
You're doing it next.
You're doing Holy it now, you moly. Jerk. Anyway, so the lesson here is my brother is a jerk. That's the lesson.
Well, yeah. And with warm up sketches, I always kind of take the idea that the clock is ticking. I got to get to work. And speaking of ticking clocks, Dave, we've come to the end of another hour of comics advice. And that means you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been the 5-time champion of Dave's Best Friend Award, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And the very trophy of friendship, Dave Kellett, the co-director of Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice, patreon.com/comiclab.
Brad, I cannot draw. I need preparation. I need to have everything just right. I can't do it. I have to get everything right as the way I want it.
I need to hold a cigarette backward in my hand at a cafe and sneer at the Americans.
I need a warm-up sketch or my hand is so cold. My hand is so cold. I can't draw. It's chilly in Paris today. I can't do it.
I don't know how cold it is, but I know I'm measuring it in Celsius, not Fahrenheit, you swine. Ho, ho, ho.
Brad, it's so cold today.
I'll tell you what I'm not. I'm not French toasty.
Oh, jeez Louise.